Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes will talk later on this hour. We will head out to Arrowhead and hear Andy Reid, hear QB1 as they get ready for the Houston Texans pardieu this year. Payback, that's what it's about. It's also the playoffs, so I don't really think you need extra motivation when it comes to the postseason, but we can also use some extra insight. Mitch Holtz, the voice of the Kansas City Chiefs, is our guest here in the zone on a Wednesday. Mitch, how are you, sir? Did you enjoy your weekend of not having to call a game or deal with the wild card round and just get to watch some football?
You know, it's awesome. I saw back-to-back movies on Thursday and Friday with my wife, like two straight date nights, which, wow. That's awesome. Then Saturday, though, was none of that. It was all about, you know, getting ready and just focusing on the wild card game. So once Saturday at noon hit, man, it was game on, and here we are.
What do you think of this matchup? Or let's ask it this way, instead of looking at right now, what do you remember from that first matchup? Like your feelings coming out of that game. What do you remember from that the first time these two teams played?
Well, I learned that you don't follow me as closely on Twitter as your wife does. Okay? Within seconds, after Logan Ryan intercepted the pass for the Tennessee Titans in another glorious moment for the Chiefs Kingdom, and thinking Hannibal's elephants are coming over the hills and Rome is burning and Nero's playing the harp of the Patriots, I tweeted out within nanoseconds the inactives that the Chiefs had on October the 13th against the Texans. I wanted to put it in perspective of just how that game was played. And no Chris Jones or Anthony Hitchens on defense, and no Eric Fisher, and no Sammy Watkins on offense. And Tyreek Hill was just coming back from injury. Mahomes had a gimpy ankle that he re-injured that day. Dorian O'Daniel's out. He's become more of a factor, especially on special teams. And yes, they didn't have Kenny Stills, but for the most part, the Chiefs were missing a lot that day. Houston did a really good job. There's a lot to that game. It's something I'm going to get to later. But that was the first thing I wanted to put out there, was that if you're going to look at this, you got to really kind of jump back in a time machine and go back to October 13th and see where the Chiefs were at that time when they played that game.
Well, you clearly don't follow me close enough on Twitter, Mitch, because I took that tweet that you tweeted out, and then I at-tweeted or whatever they call retweet with a comment, and then added on that, you know, Kendall Fuller was injured in the second quarter. Mahomes was on one leg and things along those lines. So I saw that tweet immediately and then just simply added along to what you had already pointed out, which was very astute of you to do. And that is expected on Twitter from you.
Well, you took it the next step. I mean, that's what brilliance is.
Is that right?
It's the law school professor in the your first year of constitutional law going, you're thinking this, but shouldn't you be thinking this, or what about that? And you're like, wow, I didn't even think about that. But you did, so there you go. It's brilliance.
Mitch Holtz is our guest right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Even if those guys played, and let's look at the defensive side, when you talk about Chris Jones and Anthony Hitchens and Kendall Fuller missing the last 2.5 quarters of that game, I still think, even when you're talking about just personnel, defense overall is vastly different. Even if those guys played, I think we'd still be talking about the defense in a spot right now that is just different than what we're talking about almost to the day 3 months ago that those teams faced off with Chris Jones, with Anthony Hitchens, with Kendall Fuller, and unfortunately even without Juan Thornhill.
Way, 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 way better up front. If I had 9 ways, I'd put them in there if we had time. Because there's just 9 guys now on that defensive front that can all play. Even Damon Harris has shown that he can play and contribute. Somebody's going to have to be inactive, but now that Xavier Williams is back and active. But that group, and yes, they've lost Ogbon, and yes, they've lost Okafor. But adding Terrell Suggs, a healthy Frank Clark, passing is even better than he was then. Derek Nottis continue to get better. To me, that is a enormous difference from the Chiefs' defensive front that faced the Texans that day and what the Texans will face Sunday at 2:05.
You mentioned a guy that had one of his worst days that game, and Derek Nottis. I mean, he wasn't exactly playing great football at that time, and even Pinnell wasn't even on the team at that point. So you've got those guys that have improved along the way. That was just one of those to where we're watching that team, and the Chiefs put out the under the helmet, behind the scenes of listening to Spagnuolo, and it was about 2 minutes long, and he's talking about what's happened along the way this year, Mitch, and goes through some players, and just mentions and talks about early on in the season how it was really a struggle for them to kind of get things going, and really couldn't do anything until they put pads on, and it wasn't until later on in the season that they started to figure it out and started to be able to move some guys around, and we've certainly seen that as well. But Spagnuolo talking about that as a sort of a hype video from the Chiefs, putting it into words what we've all seen and understood to be the case of even saying early in the season it was rough, and I don't know how many defensive coordinators, easy to look back now, Mitch, but how many defensive coordinators first part of the season, whew, that was not fun. I am glad that we are in this spot and not that spot.
Well, and the Chiefs survived a lot this year. I mean, that's been my with Sean Barber and me on the podcast defending the kingdom. This has been an unusual season. It's been one of survival, and in that 1-3 second quarter of the year, with the Houston game right in the middle of that, it was a survival. I think it was survival by the defense. The linebackers have played better too, but they've been helped by those guys up front, mm-hmm. the communication. And the emergence of the guys we talk about every week and the safety, the combinations that Spags can play has increased since then. It's not even the same defense that went against Houston in October. I mean, this is a group, and as you get close to the goal line, they dig their heels in. They've been able to put up a rumble strip at the 20-yard line, and really they put up a rumble strip at the 5, which is very impressive. I mean, that 4-goal-to-go takeaways is ridiculous. So this is a – you just feel way better. It's like, okay, this is a good Houston offense, but the ability to dictate terms to Houston's offense instead of the opposite. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give you the stat of the morning here. When you go back and look at that game, and you're getting it first, I'm sure now it's going to get a lot of play, but I'm going to give it a lot of discussion between now and game time. So the key drive, well, there's two key plays in the game, and both are the two biggest areas of concern for me about the Texans from the Chiefs' perspective. One is they do not change their demeanor. We saw it again on Saturday. They're down 13-0, 16-0. Watts kind of changes the game. The people around me then, I go, this changes the game potentially because it keeps it at two possessions and just changes the game mentally here. But they do not change their demeanor. That is maybe it's an AFC trait, South trait, but it's the way Tennessee plays and the Colts play. Meaning you can be up – Chiefs were up 17-3 on October the 13th.
Yeah.
And Houston did not panic. Their facial expression, their demeanor didn't change, their game plan didn't change. That's a concern. You can be up 21-0 on Sunday, and it's you got to still play. That's Andy Reid's big message to everybody this week, is it's all day long. It is all day. Whether you're up 2 touchdowns or down 2 touchdowns, Houston will not quit in this game. They just won't. The second thing, though – is their ability to kind of dictate terms. Now, on the defensive end, the biggest play in the game was the Chiefs get an interception from Thornhill to preserve a lead before the end of the second quarter. 20 seconds to go in the second quarter, and you're thinking the Chiefs have 2 timeouts. Are they going to give this a go? Maybe you try to go score at least a 3 here or go to a knee and all the fans will boo, because that's what happens when you go to a knee before the half. But then they really boo when the A-gap gets blown up by Omenihu, the rookie out of Texas, and Patrick Mahomes gets stripped of the ball and so it ends up being a short field touchdown, and the Chiefs lose the lead. And then fans are going, well, maybe I shouldn't have booed if they go to a knee right before the half. Now, let me think this through. But here's the key stat I'm going to bring up. I went back to the last drive. The Chiefs still regained the lead in the second half, going up 24-23. But then a 12-play, 93-yard drive engineered by Deshaun Watson, very balanced. Runs, throws, chunk runs, chunk throws, dictating terms at the line of scrimmage. A 12-play, 93-yard drive. How many third-down conversions, J.A., did the Texans have on that monster 12-play, 93-yard drive to take the lead?
I'm going to guess 3.
Excellent guess, based on, you know, probabilities in the past or looking at answer, 0.
Wow.
0, and it tells you my point here. Every one of those 12 plays on that drive was either first or second down. The Chiefs need to – you always want to get off to a fast start. The Texans are near the bottom of the league. I think they're tied for last or near tied for next to last in points that they get on a first possession. But that they keep on sawing wood. But it does help to get a lead. They're not going to quit playing, but you also have to win on these early downs with these guys. I mean, they're a little bit like K-State playing Navy. If you don't do something on first down to make them really uncomfortable, they're going to dictate terms to you. Now, that's normally the case. That's not scientific. However, with some teams, it's more important than that than other teams. And I think with this Houston team, it's dramatically important. When they've lost their games this year, their 5 losses with Watson a quarterback, McCann quarterback the 6th game where they were just playing the JVs. But when Watson was out there, most of his sacks were on first down. He was sacked 24 times in their 5 losses. 17 of those 24 were on first down. He was sacked 6 times in 2 of those, or maybe 3 of those 5 losses. And now all of a sudden, when they get behind the chains, it's a lot tougher for them than some other teams in the NFL. So, again, you've got to think of the collegiate version of Navy here, the NFL version of Navy, because they like to win on first down, and then all of a sudden they're like, what are you going to do about it? And the Chiefs need to turn the cannon on them in this game.
Yeah, and I think Carlos Hyde being able to run the football in that game against the Chiefs was a big factor as well. I don't know how effective he'll be on Sunday. Certainly the Chiefs' run defense is different now than it was at that time, so we will see. Mitch Holtus, the guest here.
Done too, let me just give you an add-on to that, is the fact that they've used Duke Johnson better as a runner now. Duke Johnson always thought to be a third-down pass-catch guy, right? He's been better as a runner. That's the difference I see in them. One of the differences in the last half of this season is it's not just, hey, we're going to run it with Hyde and throw it with Duke Johnson. There's more balance and a little more unpredictability from them.
And I think, too, I know that I've heard a number of times this year about Carlos Hyde as the Chiefs moved on from Carlos Hyde and they bring in LeSean McCoy and he goes to the Texans and he rushes for 1,000 yards. And we're talking about differences at, you know, running backs and kind of that revolving door that the Chiefs have had with injuries and things like that. I do think it should be pointed out that, a few weeks ago, Carlos Hyde was 4th in the NFL in yards per attempt before contact. So the holes in the lanes that were there for Carlos Hyde with the Chiefs offensive line and them trying to get through injuries and the offense not being what it was a year ago in the running game, I don't think Carlos Hyde is creating, 5, 6, 7 extra yards that are not there. In fact, he's the 40th best running back in the league in yards gained above expectation, one of those analytical things. If you want to know a comparison, Damian Williams is 15th in the NFL in that particular stat of yards gained above what would be expected or yards gained above what they expect the offensive line has blocked for. Offensive line blocks for 4 yards. Damian Williams is going to create more yards than Carlos Hyde is. And I just think that's one of the points to bring up is that not every 1,000-yard season is created equally. Not every running back, raw numbers are created equally.
Well, and Damian Williams has shown he's got the 2 longest runs in the league.
Mm-hmm.
So now, when you have home run threats at receiver with Tyreek Hill and Mecole Hardman, you've now got a home run guy running the ball, meaning to your point that that 91-yard run wasn't some tricky, crazy trick play against the Vikings, who at the time had one of the best run defenses in the league. And the 84-yarder against the Chargers wasn't some 50-yardless little double reverse around here. So I think the point's a good one. Although Carlos Hyde's a really good back. I mean, we saw it even in the preseason.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to sit around and go, who's going to cut Carlos Hyde? Well, who are you going to cut? And who, again, you can't look at these decisions when they're made in later. I mean, we do that in history all the time. You have to go when the decision was made. And so at the time, the Chiefs just had this, blessing of running backs and you didn't want to cut a young Darrell Williams. You didn't want to cut a young Darlin Thompson because he was showing stuff in the preseason in St. Joe. You're going, may have something here. And I think that the running back position has not been a disappointment. It's just that you had too many guys, and somebody had to go. And Carlos Hyde's a good running back that you had to let go.
Mitch Holtz is our guest right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It is The Zone. One of the things that that we've seen on this defensive side, and Spagnuolo talking about Tyrann Mathieu, Carson Palmer was on with the Border Patrol this morning, and he was glowing about Tyrann Mathieu. Pro Football Focus had the stat that from weeks 10 through 17, Tyrann Mathieu was the best safety in the league, had an 86 overall grade, which is first, had a 90.6 coverage grade, which is first, 6.9 yards per reception, which is first. He's the only safety to have three or more interceptions, three or more pass breakups, and zero touchdowns allowed. That is from weeks 10 to 17. He has been dominant. I think he's been almost a step above maybe what the Chiefs were hoping or expecting to get in the impact that he's made. I asked this question in the previous segment, Mitch, so I'll ask you, and I know it might be premature to talk about, but I think we're asking the question because of the impact that's already been made. If we look through defensive free agents that the Chiefs have signed, is Mathieu already at the top or near the top of that list of free agent signings on the defensive side of the ball?
Well, it would be hard to argue against that. I don't know if you've got to look really throughout the hard gamut of the league, and maybe that's your question. Mm-hmm. That his impact, I think, has been understated. Now, all of a sudden, people are saying the last 6 weeks, and I think brought it out to you either last week or 2 weeks ago, what he had done, and just listing his what he had done on the field. Now, one thing that's not mentioned in there is his ability to tackle. And there's also a hidden story in all those numbers, which are outstanding. His ability to tackle, but his ability to play at the line of scrimmage. That gives Spagnuolo the ability to be creative. We mentioned that these safeties can interchange. But Tyrann Mathieu isn't just getting high grades on coverage. Give him high grades, too, on tackling and pressuring. The non-stat plays where a quarterback now has to go to another spot. His primary receiver's gone, so now I have to go to option B or C. That allows a little more time to either get a sack or maybe make a creative defensive play. Well, but Mathieu doesn't get credit for that. However, he dictates the play. So right now I talk about Houston dictating a line of scrimmage. Mathieu can do that too. But here's something. It's a big week for the Honey Badger. It's a really big week for him. And I'm excited for him. And I say this as a positive. You know how many playoff games he's won?
Zero. Yeah.
Honey Badger does it this week and wins a divisional playoff game. It's a big deal. And I don't mean that as a negative. I mean it as a positive. This is a big week for him. This is a big opportunity for him. When he decided to come to Kansas City, the franchise, the show that we have on 65 TPT, did a great job of chronicling him getting off the plane and like new start. And by the way, he was with Houston. He had to make the decision, am I leaving Houston and going to Kansas City? Yes, I am. Well, all of a sudden now, this has worked out both ways. If you want a great free agent signing, it's one that has the two-way conduit. And the team has been helped as much as he's been helped. However, he's been helped. And he's been helped in his career to be in this environment, to be around Coach Reed, and to have potential playoff success. It's something the Badger hasn't tasted. He's had a lot of larva, eats a lot of cobra, and now he's eating like, anacondas or whatever. But the point is he's got a chance to win in the postseason, and he's never had that chance before.
Mitch Holtz is our guest right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. What do you see from this Houston team with and without Will Fuller? That seems to be one of the things that's been talked about this week is the health of Will Fuller. Didn't play last week against the Bills. They struggled offensively. He did play in the first matchup, did Will Fuller. And many people looking to the Houston Texans practice reports to see what that groin is doing for Fuller. So what do you see from the Houston Texans if he plays or doesn't play?
It's interesting. I think it's more of his presence than production. If you study his production, it hasn't been overwhelming. In fact, he has three touchdowns all season, and they're all in the same game. He only has 49 catches on 71 targets. So he's battled the injuries you talked about. But it's not like this is a 100-catch guy like Hopkins. I mean, Hopkins has 104 catches, 1165. Fuller has 49 for 670. But what I do think his presence means is now all of a sudden it opens things up for guys like Darren Fells, the tight end, who was a big factor in the game on October the 13th. It opens up things for if they want to pass to the running backs, or even Kenny Stills. Stills, who did not play on October the 13th, he has become, you know, a target of choice. I mean, he had 105 yards in Indianapolis and 40 catches. Kenny Stills says he also missed time with injury, but has almost as many catches as Fuller. So Fuller, his ability to take the lid off the defense, meaning I'm out here, you better respect it, instead of going, wow, he's going to be a 10-catch, 150-yard guy, he's allowing the other guys around the field to have that opportunity, something we see Tyreek Hill do for the Chiefs mm-hmm. offense.
Yep, absolutely. What do you think the key is for the Chiefs on Sunday? What do you if they do this, they'll take care of the Houston Texans and either be going to Baltimore or staying home for Tennessee?
Attack these dudes, attack them. I mean, this is a full-on attack, and you cannot breathe. You cannot exhale in this game. This is going to be a 70-80 snap game, and you can't exhale on any of them. To get off to a fast start and treat the first play like the last play is kind of a playoff thing. We saw that intensity in all the wild card games. But against certain opponents, it's even more important. And I think it's paramount against Houston to do that. What we did not talk about was Houston's secondary. The thing that concerns me up front about Houston the most is those big guys up front defensively dictating terms. And we know about J.J. Watts. Merciless gets a lot of attention. I'm talking D.J. Reader, Omenihu, who made the big sack strip on Mahomes. Blackson. Those are big, giant dudes that wreck the A gap, and that could be a problem. However, if you get time, you can absolutely attack the secondary. They are last in the NFL in third, or next to last, I'm the last in the NFL in red zone defense, dead last. I mean, it's pretty rough to see their stats and red card, not only red zone, but on third down, big plays given up. It's a secondary where they've looked for answers all year. Very different secondary than the Chiefs faced on October the 13th. They traded to Oakland for Darion Conley. They were desperate. They get Darion Conley to play corner. They pick up Vernon Hargreaves the third, basically off the scrap heap. He's the third most burned defender in the NFL this year, and Tampa Bay cut him in November. And they signed him in November going, hey, we got to try something. And they have Bradley Roby, the former Bronco guy. They lost to Sean Gibson. They're really good safety for the season. So if you get some time, you could absolutely attack these dudes at the second and third level of their defense. But you have to protect the A-gap and against those giants in the middle. And then on the other side, you've got to dictate terms to them. You've got to crush them on first down. And I mean crush them. You may have to get a sack or a negative play. You get them behind the chains, you can make life really miserable for these guys.
I'm looking forward to it. I cannot wait. Mitch Holthus, our guest, the voice of the Kansas City Chiefs. The next three games, 4 weeks, are what careers and reputations are made, and should be a lot of fun. Cannot wait to see some of the plays and things that happen on Sunday. Mitch, I really appreciate it, sir. Looking forward to Sunday and the call. Have a good one. We'll talk next week as hopefully we're talking about a trip to Baltimore or a home game against the Titans. Thank you, sir.
As I heard your words, what did you say? These were memories were made, or these were I heard John Facenda's voice.
Is that right?
Like, yes, this music behind.
That's right, yeah. Dum 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 dum.
Maybe I heard Shane's voice. I don't know. Maybe it was something. Anyway,
it was both.
It was very well said.
And the visual is through the air, just the picture of the football with the sky behind it and the slow revolutions that the football is making while he's talking. That's the picture of the NFL films.
Well, you see Spider-Man go right behind the slow-moving football. Wait a minute, that's Mahomes.
Yeah, that's...
He's Spider-Man, yeah. And so I'm with you. Just a little newer version, a little Marvel Comics version of John Facenda.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Mitch, yeah. Have a good one, buddy. There's Mitch Holthus, our guest. So does that make Patrick Mahomes off the field Peter Parker, you know, if he's on the field?
We called him Batman because of the throw, so he's mixing his DC and Marvel. I got to talk to Mitch.
Is that right? Mixing metaphors is like mixing DC and Marvel.
You can't say Batman and Spider-Man, same guy. It's different.
Nerds.
Yep, you know what?
Well, it is. I mean, it is.
Own it, and I own it.
It is completely different. I was, my wife and I were talking about that with Toys for the Boy, and she was going through, like, you know, he's got the fist thing that goes over your hand that's Thanos, and we were talking about the Marvels, and then she said, well, they would have one for Batman, right? It's the same thing. And I'm like, hey, it's DC, you know, it's not Marvel. Look,
I would do terrible in this trivia category. Look, I don't know the difference.
I'm not the guy to be a stickler over that, like probably Shane is, but mm-hmm. just simply the difference between
the two. I recognize
there's
a difference.
Yeah, that's all.
I don't know the difference. I do enjoy the superhero stuff, though. I'm not anti superhero movies.
I've gotten into it after the fact. I was never into it with the comic books.
Me neither.
But with the movies and TV shows and things like that,
I've
definitely gotten into that. 913-912-4810. We will take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll continue rolling with a little more zone. We got a segment here before we head out to Arrowhead with Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. They will be at the podium talking, getting ready for the Texans. Mick Schaefer will join us at 1 o'clock. More zone, more Chiefs next.
You're in the zone with Jason Anderson.
Look for 65 toss power trap. What does it look like?
Hey, look for...
Tell him 65 toss power trap. That might pop wide open, Rats.
Running play coming to Garrett on a trap. Touchdown! Garrett scores from the five.
Was that there, Rats?
Nice going, baby.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Come on, Lenny. Pump it in there, baby. Just keep it trickling the ball down the field, boys.
Mick Schaefer is going to join us at 1 o'clock. Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes at the podium in about 10, 15 minutes from now. So we will head out there as soon as they get rolling and as soon as they start. Thank you, Mitch Holtis, joining us, the voice of the Kansas City Chiefs, breaking down this Chiefs team, getting ready for the divisional round, getting ready for the Texans, and everybody watching Tennessee and Baltimore on Saturday night. But this is the time of the year where we talk about careers and reputations and things like that. This is where they're made. This is where the plays that you remember, the postseason plays, the playoff plays, the Super Bowl plays that we remember, we talk about, that are on highlights of Hall of Fame induction ceremony intros, are the next 3 weeks, or 3 games, 4 weeks, 3 games for these teams that will be playing 3 games. Or maybe even just a couple of games. These are the things we remember, which was one of the things that get you pumped and excited as to who knows what's going to happen on Sunday. No idea what play here or there.
About Deshaun Watson.
That's right.
The play he made against the Bills. Houston fans are going to remember that play forever because it's one of those huge moments that gets you a playoff victory. And then they're just kind of cemented if it ends up being like a Super Bowl run. Still going to be one they'll always remember.
Is there another play in the Chiefs-Oilers divisional round in 93 that's remembered other than the Keith Cash touchdown and throw, Buddy Ryan? Like, I know, like, Marcus Allen broke free for a touchdown. I can kind of picture that. That Keith Cash touchdown and spike to Buddy Ryan, it's in my memory as if I'm watching it right now on a rerun. And so something along those lines like that. I don't remember a whole lot from that game other than the Chiefs played really well, won the game, capped it off at the end. Other than you felt like they were there to kick their ass when Keith Cash spiked the ball to Buddy Ryan. That was awesome. And it's one that you'll remember, but that's a good point with the Deshaun Watson, play, with the win against the Bills in overtime. That was huge.
They might always forget who caught it. Because Tywan Jones won't be a household name.
I was just going to call him Johnson.
But people remember David Tyree.
I was literally just going to call him. It was Johnson. It was Jones.
Yeah, Tywan
Jones. I was close.
Jones.
So thank you. It was not to Johnson.
By the way, text message here. Shane said he's going to have to talk to Mitch about correcting him for the DC Marvel thing.
Yeah.
Tell Shane no one corrects Mitch. He's the Chuck Norris of football announcers.
Okay, I get that. I'll just quiet down and keep it to myself then.
DC and Marvel merged because Mitch told them to. That's he is the Chuck Norris of play-by-play announcers. At NFL.com, Dan Hanzus, is that how you pronounce his name? Hanzus.
Did Hanzus, you say it? Probably not.
Hanzus. Is it a hard U?
It's actually
it's a soft U.
Devon.
Ah, Devon.
Dan Devon.
Devon Tungavailoa is this guy's name. Dan Hanzus, Hanzus. I don't know. We'll go with that. He's got his power rankings out for the rest of the playoffs. He put them out there at the beginning of the playoffs with all 12 teams, and now we're down to 8. Mm-hmm. So he's reassessed, restructured, re-ranked them. The Chiefs move up one spot. They were number 4 last week. They're number 3 now because the Saints were his number two team. Mm-hmm. That did not work out. So take that with a grain of salt as we go through these rankings, because he did have Saints at number two. And by the way, I don't know that many people at the time would have disagreed. He had Ravens 1, Saints 2, 49ers 3, Chiefs 4. I might have disagreed with the 2, 3, and 4. But having Saints as the number one team in the NFC, I know that they were going to have to go on the road the next 2 weeks, but certainly they were capable of doing that. That was a team that many people thought were going to be winning the NFC. A lot of predictions for the Saints. That did not happen, obviously. So he has re-ranked them. Number one is Ravens. Number two, 49ers. Number three, Chiefs. I mean, we're splitting hairs if you're saying 49ers or Chiefs at two or three. I think most everybody's going to have the Ravens at number one because of the way they played and what the 12-game winning streak that they're on right now.
And the MVP
home field advantage, yeah. MVP at quarterback, the style they play, the way they play, things like that. I think they're going to have them at number one. I mean, if you want to argue 49ers, I don't know. Can you really, differentiate and go through and say, no, the Chiefs are better than the 49ers because of different I would take the Chiefs over the 49ers, obviously. I'm perfectly fine if the 49ers win the NFC and the Chiefs play them in the Super Bowl. I'm perfectly fine with really whatever team that is left that the Chiefs play. The Saints were the ones that you thought about and was like, oh, Seahawks don't bother me.
Because that means they're in the Super Bowl. So it doesn't matter.
I just meant from a winning the Super Bowl. Get there. It's like, you're playing in the Final Four. Well, you might as well win it when you're there, right? You hoist the Hunt Trophy. You might as well win it when you're there. And so of the NFC teams, there's really not one that I'm like, oh, well, I mean, Vikings and Seahawks. Seahawks still don't scare me. Like, I mean, I don't see them winning. And Packers and 49ers, we'll see. But the thing that I really wanted to point out was going through his power rankings, he's got the Texans at eight. Eight of eight teams. He's got the Texans dead last of the eight teams remaining that are the best. And I don't necessarily disagree. I just don't think all that much about how the Texans are all that great. Like, I mean,
is there a team left that you would pick them to beat?
The Texans?
Yeah, on a neutral field. Obviously, we're not talking with home field advantage. On a neutral field, I might pick them to beat the Vikings.
I'd say maybe Seahawks.
Titans or Seahawks.
Yeah, I don't really believe in the Seahawks. So maybe Seahawks, maybe Titans, but I'll take Titans over Texans on a neutral field right now. So they could, but they wouldn't. I would take Titans over Texans right now on a neutral field. I would take Seahawks over Texans. But, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'll take Texans over Seahawks. Again, I just don't really believe in the Seahawks at all.
Seahawks are not good defensively.
I mean, they...
It's because Russell Wilson...
They survived the Eagles that had no skill position players and no Carson Palmer, and they survived that one. I don't believe too much in the Eagles there. We take a break. We come back on the other side. Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes at the podium. That's next.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
I actually was only half listening to you.
Oh, yeah.
On Sports Radio 810.
Todd Lebo says, one, they're connected out there. Two, it's packed, jam-packed. I would like to know the added media to the room outside of the local. We know James Palmer of NFL Network, because he came on yesterday, said he was getting ready to jump on a plane and head to Kansas City for the week. So he is there at the press conference, I'm assuming. But if it's that crazy packed, is it just locally, everybody's there and sending more people? News people are now going to show up at the press conferences as well. When you know it's a big deal is when the news people show up to sports press conferences.
So I've got the photo up. There's more cameras than normal.
Okay.
I count 10 cameras. Normally there's what, like five?
Five or six, yeah.
So more cameras there. But everybody I see...
How are they going to fit 10 cameras in there? The five or six barely fit.
There's only one guy.
So you got stadium seating with the cameras?
What's the over-under questions asked before some reporter that has a piece that they're doing talking about LDT being a doctor or something random where you're just like, what?
What would
about
be the
five
thing?
Five questions.
What would be the thing that that is talked about? Maybe to Patrick Mahomes about when he was injured against the Denver Broncos. Like, that whole process and coming back. Can you take us through that, Patrick?
You've been a Texas guy before. Texas barbecue versus Kansas City barbecue, now that you've been in both. Somebody with some generic story.
Why ask the question when we already know the answer?
Yeah.
I mean, what's
There's a guy with a St. Louis Blues hat that is looking down, so I can't see his face. I just see the St. Louis Blues hat. He's clearly not a normal media member because he's got a big sticker on his shirt that says media access. So it's clearly a temporary. I don't know if he's from St. Louis or just a Blues fan. James Palmer's talking to some gal that I don't recognize.
Allie Trost is there.
Yeah.
She's always there, though.
There's some people with their heads down that could be newbies. Because the faces that I can see, I recognize.
I do see. I mean, James Palmer's right there with the hair.
Yeah.
I mean, he looks good.
I can't tell who the gal is he's talking to because Adam Teicher's clock blocking her, right?
He's doing the same thing.
Yeah, Teicher's right in front of her. So
where's Mellinger? Who's he clock blocking right
Isn't
now?
Isn't that him with his back turned with
is.
The jacket
yep,
on?
That yeah. is. Yep, that's right. Mick Schaefer.
Jacket on day for
Mick
Sam
Schaefer
Mellinger.
Rubbing his nose.
Mm-hmm.
Adam Teicher with a front row seat. Allie Trost with a front row seat. Blair Kirchhoff there. Set up, ready to go. Yeah, so looks like just mainly a lot of the local media that's mm-hmm. there. A couple of national. Therese was there on Monday. Todd Lebo tweeted out the picture. I think Seren Petra retweeted it. But Therese was there on Monday. You knew it was a big deal then. It's a big deal because he was there. So actually, I'm sorry. Seren Petra tweeted it. Todd Lebo retweeted it. So either one of those Twitter accounts would
the
be
the guy with
to
the Blues hat. I've seen. He's like an ESPN cameraman. He comes to every game with James Palmer.
Oh, okay. So he follows Palmer around. All right. So Palmer's got his guy. Good for him. Mick Schaefer doesn't have a guy.
Mm-mm.
Everywhere.
Mick Schaefer is Mick Schaefer's
That's
guy.
That's exactly right. Yes. Mick Schaefer only needs a guy. So there you go. We're getting ready for Andy Reid. Packed house. Be even crazier packed next week as well. Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes are going to be heading to the podium here in just a little bit. And then Mick Schaefer will join us in the 1 o'clock hour as a lot of stuff going up because locker room's going to be open too. So there's going to be some players that we're going to hear from in the locker room getting set for this Texans game, and certainly some players that have never played in the postseason before that are getting opportunities to go and see what it feels like for the first time. And, man, how many times have we heard over the last couple of weeks ex-players and coaches talk about, well, it's a different speed now. You know, there's a certain speed in the preseason, there's a certain speed in the regular season, and then there's another speed in the playoffs. Heck, Bill O'Brien yesterday said there's another speed in the AFC championship game and another speed in the Super Bowl. Like, it ratchets up.
So by the Super Bowl, everybody runs like Tyreek Hill?
That's exactly right.
They
yes.
all go faster?
Everybody's...
And then Tyreek obviously runs faster than Tyreek now.
Tyreek is now at 27 miles an hour.
It's like they're all on ice skates. It's hockey.
That's right.
Suddenly.
Tyreek actually turns into a cheetah when he's and the ball is just attached to him with glue. Are we heading out there? Here we go. Let's head out to the
all right.
Center.
So really the only person that'll miss practice today is Mo Claiborne, and it's for personal reasons. So it's not due to injury. Everybody else will practice. Look forward to the challenge of playing the Texans. We know they're a good football team. So we got to get ourselves ready, and we're going to go through the process of that and get ready again for – you know, play against a good football team and a great, great atmosphere here at Arrowhead. So, with that, time's yours.
Anyone makes a good deep passing game in your eyes, kind of the way you've developed it over the years?
Completions. you know, it's got to be worked timing wise with the quarterbacks and the receivers, tight ends, running backs in some cases. So, there's just there's a ton of timing and work that goes into that. So. And then practicing it, having good players, good quarterbacks.
Coach, I know it works both ways, but when you're facing a team for the second time, I know you do it within the division, but does it get easier during your game plan meetings and you're talking with the players because everybody's so familiar because you've faced them before that you can get a little bit more done in that way?
Yeah, we have that part that's familiar. They're familiar with us, we're familiar with them. And so you dig in and you study. They do a variety of things. On both sides of the football and special teams. So whatever route they're going to go with it, you got to make sure you study. And that's the part that takes the time, whether you know them or don't know them. You got to make sure that you have all the bases covered there.
Andy, with everything that occurred with Patrick in terms of injuries and then the amount of injuries you had to certain skill position players, how fortunate is it to not only get the bye week, but that it appears that Patrick and all the skill position players are as healthy as you could want going into January?
Yeah, I mean, this time of the year, I think that's a good thing. You're right. I mean, it's a long season, 17 weeks into it, and it's good to have those guys out there and running around. So, I mean, that's a plus. I think Bill would probably tell you the same thing on the other side, having his guys there as a plus. So as much continuity as you can keep, you appreciate.
One thing we talked about is the speed of the game picks up in the playoffs. What gives you the confidence that Nicole was ready for this amount of national spotlight in this type of game?
Yeah, well, first of all, he came from a major college, so he's used to playing in front of big crowds and at a high level. I'm not that worried about him in this atmosphere. I just want him to prep for the plays and making sure that he has that down and then go play. So, and he's got enough guys around him that have been, you know, either here or somewhere else, been to the playoffs. So he's got good people he can talk to.
Coach, you had mentioned the load management approach with LeSean McCoy the second half of the season progressed. How fresh is he now, and how much do you see his role increasing as we enter the playoffs?
Yeah, well, we've got three good backs that we can move in and out, so that we feel comfortable with. And you know, our young kids come along good, and so between the three of them, all of them give you a different flavor. So we're good with all of them. I don't want to slight one over the other right now, but all three will most likely have a chance to contribute. So.
Eric Richards had some pretty good games against J.J. Watt in the past. You know, what is it that's really helped him build into the reliability you've had there on the backside of the quarterback and his success against J.J.?
Well, they know each other first, right, from college. So before he transferred to Wisconsin, they were together, you know, up in Michigan there. So they know each other. And there's a battle that goes on. I mean, because of that, that's a fun thing to watch. It's J.J.'s gotten a few, Eric's gotten a few, but it's a good battle, which it will be on Sunday. But there's that personal side of it too, where they know each other, that makes it even better. But I wouldn't say one's over the other. I think they both get after each other, and it's you know, if you have eyes for the O&D line, that's a good one to watch.
Kind of to follow up what DJ was talking about, when you face a team a second time. I know it's the playoffs and nobody needs any motivation, right? Because you lose, you go home. But do you find that there's an advantage? One, you know, if you've won, you're extra confident. If you've lost, you've got more motivation to prove that you're better. Is there an edge that comes one side or the other?
Yeah, I think, listen, I think you're in the playoffs. And I think all that, you play, right? So you just get in and go. And when you're in the moment, you're not thinking all that. You're thinking of winning your one-on-one battle and how you're going to do that. And if you win it, you want to win it again. And if you get beat on it, then you're going to come back and figure it out and get busy to do it the right way.
Is there an edge for the guys who didn't get a chance to play?
I think they all would like to play because it's a good football team. So now they have an opportunity.
Coach, your record coming out, guys, is pretty incredible. What is your approach to preparing during a bye week that allows you to have that kind of success?
Yeah, I don't know that. I mean, I don't know necessarily what other people do. I always say I've got good coaches and good players, and I think that's probably it. I don't know why that's happened. It's one of those things, I think. So.
With the presumably healthy, does he factor right back in, or will that be something you guys work throughout the week?
Yeah, we'll see how it goes during the week. You know, Wiz did a nice job the last time he was in. So, we're comfortable with either guy, obviously.
And you mentioned just the experience mattering, having past playoff experience. What are some of the finer details that you noticed that does factor in?
Yeah. Well, you understand that the game's faster. And it's hard to explain that, but there's a certain urgency that comes with it. Not that the guys aren't playing hard. That's not what it is. It's a step up. And every level you take in the playoffs, they're just that much faster, the game is.
Is that something that's difficult to coach and explain? Is something that you actually have to experience and be on the field for to know it?
Yeah, but that doesn't mean you can't be successful at it, right? So you just have to know it and then take it to heart and then go about your work during the week that way. Yeah.
And you had so many coaches go on to be head coaches elsewhere. I'm curious, in your experience, what do they learn by going on the head coaching interviews? Like, what positives do they pick up from those experiences?
Yeah, so, they can learn a ton about other organizations, how they're run, and expectations there, you know. So that either gives them another opportunity down the road or something that they can file away, you know, for whether it's this year or the following year, you know.
How many times have you, like, if you had an assistant go on these interviews, maybe they don't get hired, but they come back and they communicate to you, I can tweak my plan this way, I can, you know.
Sure. Yeah, every time they have an opportunity to do it, they've learned. And, you know, it's just whatever flavor that the ownership or general managers, whatever flavor they want. And so, you know, they have a choice. They have this wide pool and they pick from, so.
My last question is, I'm sure you've addressed this over the course of a year, but how similar or dissimilar or whatever is the play calling mechanism now compared to past years when I was a B guy under Nags, when Doug was
yeah.
similar to it?
Yeah, same basic thing. So, you know, EB gets plays to the quarterback. He and I talk. We formulate in between series what we're going to call, and we go with it.
Andy, what tells you that Pat is maybe more prepared for playoff football than he was even last year?
Well, I think, Adam, I think it's just experience in general. I mean, last year it was a whirlwind. You'd probably say coming in is really a rookie or a second-year guy that didn't play much his first year. So getting used to the speed, the defenses, all those things of the game, and then up in that when you get in the playoffs was one more thing. So that's where the experience, you know, helps you a little bit.
Since the last game against the Texans, did you ever get a clarification from the league on the non-pass interference call against Kelce?
I did, yes.
Are you satisfied with that?
Well, listen, unless you're going to pay for me, I'm just going to kind of let that one go.
We talk a lot about experience and, you know, these young quarterbacks and how they've gotten through experience. Can you think back to when you first coached in playoff games, how much more prepared you are coaching in these games, or how long did that kind of take you to get the feel for the speed? Because it's fast for coaches, too.
Yeah, well, you've got to be on your game. I mean, but that's the part you love, right? So the questions about the players or coaches, I mean, this is what we do, and we're fortunate to be in this position, and you love that opportunity. And you know it doesn't happen every year. So when you're there, it's the ultimate challenge, and let's go.
Did you feel comfortable after a couple of games as head coach in the playoffs, or, you know, when did you feel like, hey, man, I understand this is where it is?
Yeah, listen, I mean, that was a long time ago, so I'm not sure. I don't know that. It's a good question. I just don't know the answer.
Coach, you talked a lot about the experience of someone like McCole Hardman in front of big crowds. What is it like for someone like Colin Saunders, who didn't come from a big college and is getting ready to play in a big game like this?
Yeah. I think with his personality, if you know him, I don't think that's going to bother him. He is an upbeat guy, and he's very smart, and he's a fun, kind of that fun-loving guy that brings energy to a room, you know, and that whole deal. So I don't think that's going to be a problem for him. I don't foresee that. He's not, you know.
Coach, you saw the Texans come back from a pretty large deficit when you played them in Week 6 and then again against the Bills. How do you prepare your players going into a game where they're facing a team that has shown that kind of fight to the end mentality?
Yeah, you got to play 4 quarters of football. Yeah, so you know that. You have to do it during the season, even more so during the game. You look at stats over the years in the playoff games, the margin between the winning and losing is even more narrow than what it was during the season. So you got to make sure that you're sharp on all your different situations that you come across, and your 2 minutes and four, all those things become prevalent and even more magnified than they are during the regular season.
James, Andy, you mentioned that, you know, last year was kind of a whirlwind for Pat and a lot of things went right, and then this year is the ankle, the knee, and has talked about how he has to win games different ways. Can you kind of talk about the growth you saw in him and how he had to get through this year and kind of the self-scouting that he's kind of seems really good at?
Yeah, I loved it, because the second year is a tough year for quarterbacks. Tough year. These guys, there's some great minds in the National Football League that are coaching the defensive side of the ball. So they have a whole year offseason to study it, and they're going to come back with their absolute best against you. And he answered it. and he did it through some adversity, like you're saying, with injuries or players that weren't playing, whatever it might be. And he didn't flinch. He kept the same attitude, the same work ethic, and he went after it. And he had a major injury that he pushed through, where the coaches and the trainers and the doctors all had to back him off. And so that mindset is important in this day and age of football. It's an important thing to have, especially in a leadership position.
Coach, last year we saw Treveris Ward develop a lot of confidence just the way that he played in the postseason there, and then this year kind of build upon that. Just the for a quieter guy that he is, just for him to build that confidence, how important is that at that position going into the playoffs and some of the guys he's going to face this?
Yeah, he's a smart kid. He is quiet, but he's a smart kid. And I felt like it was just a matter of him, more reps he got, the more things he saw from these defenses. He's a bigger kid too, so he has to play it a little different way than a smaller, you know, ultimate quick twitch guy. I mean, he's a little bit longer than that. And like some of the corners in this league. So they just have to play it a little different and be able to read and see things and react to that. And I think that's where he's gotten better.
All right. Thank you.
Andy Reid there at the podium. We'll wait for Patrick Mahomes to hit the podium here in just a little bit. I like the end part there when he was talking about Mahomes in the second year. James Palmer asked about, you know, what did you see, the adversity, what he went through in his second year. And his first response was, I loved it. Talking about the adversity he had to face, because he said second year is always the toughest because he comes out the way that he did in his first year as a starter. Second year in the NFL was his first year as a starter, but he was talking about second year as a starter is always the toughest year because the defenses know what you're going to do. The D coordinators are going to put their best out. They've seen you for a year now, and then you've got to respond. The numbers were down, certainly, this year, but as Andy Reid said, he answered it. And he responded, and then the injuries he pushed through, they had to pull him back a little bit for him to push through. So Andy Reid seemed to be, you know, sometimes you can get a lot of coach speak from Andy Reid. That didn't seem to be coach speak, that there was a level of appreciation or excitement or complimentary of what this season actually was for Patrick Mahomes, rather than just simply looking at raw numbers of touchdowns mm-hmm. compared to a year ago to this year, scoring down, efficiency, red zone, all of those things not being what it was a year ago, and him talking about really compared to what typically might happen is a second-year starter. He loved what he saw this year from Mahomes.
Well, yeah, and a lot of learning how to play the game, right? Last year was just kind of like video game numbers. Everything seemed to come so easy. You knew the defense was stopping nobody, and you had to go out and put up these crazy numbers. This year, learning how to manage games that you can trust your defense sometimes and learning how to do that.
Yeah, so we talked about that. Didn't really want to get into it. He's been asked a number of times about coming off a bye, and he responds the same way. I don't know. Not sure why there's success. I have good players and coaches. That's what I would go with. Maybe he doesn't know. Maybe because he's probably not in bye weeks of all these other coaches that are out there, mm-hmm. you know, prepping and preparing their teams. And so maybe there is something that he does different than other coaches do or have done, or what would be a standard way of approaching it. Or maybe he's just a good coach. Maybe he's just a, you know, really, really good coach, and that's why he has success with an extra week to prepare and plan, mm-hmm. which is part of the reason why I really, really like the Chiefs on Sunday, is that you've got less than a week. Well, I guess it is a week because they played on a Saturday, but a week to prepare for the Chiefs with Bill O'Brien and 2 weeks prepare for Andy Reid against Bill O'Brien and the Houston Texans. I'll take my chances.
And the funny thing about that stat is that as he's gotten to be a better coach and learn more over his years, he's gotten worse coming right off of bye weeks. He started 13-0 in right. his career off of bye weeks, and in the last 7 years, he had gone 4-3 coming off of a bye week. Now he got another win this year against the Raiders, so 5-3 in the last 8 years off of the bye week in the regular season. So to think that he somehow was better in his first 13 years than he's been in his last eight is silly to think of. So some of that is just circumstantial, but overall for his career, yes, in his 21 seasons, he's gone 18-3 off of a bye week in the regular season. And obviously last year you saw what he did against the Colts off of that bye week.
I do wonder too. And look, this is, you know, Soren asked the question about, you know, second time you play a team and there's no need or reason for extra motivation. You don't need bulletin board material to get you ready to play for the divisional round in the NFL playoffs, right? But is there something to where you kind of get that feeling of this is a team that beat you? Maybe there is a little bit more there. He kind of dismissed that too, and I understand where you'd be coming from and dismissing that. It's like it's the divisional round. Here's Patrick Mahomes.
MVP season, throwing for a lot, having just a lot of points on the board this year with a more balanced team. Does it feel different going into the playoffs than it did a year ago?
For me, I think the only thing that's really different is just having the experience, being able to play in games like this at Arrowhead and being able to win one and lose one. And so I understand that how much every single play counts, how much every single rep and practice counts, and how you have to really take advantage of every single opportunity that you get.
Roger, Andy mentioned that the game speeds up in the playoffs. So I'm wondering if there was a moment last year against the Colts where that sort of hit you, that the game was a little bit of a different speed.
I think you can feel it in pregame warmups. You can feel the intensity. You can feel how much faster everybody's moving around, how much every single play counts. And you get out there in warmups and you feel that energy, and you have to make sure that you kind of maintain and find a way to do whatever it is to put your team in the best situation every single play.
We asked Coach a little bit about his incredible record coming off byes and what his approach is during bye weeks that has allowed him that kind of success. What is your own opinion on what allows Coach Reed to have the kind of success if he does come out?
I think he does a good job of letting us heal our bodies, but at the same time keeping us in that same rhythm, that same thing that we have going all season long. He's gotten a good feel for it, understands how to make sure our heads are still in the game and we're still preparing for that next game, even if we don't know necessarily who we're playing. And at the same time, we're healing our bodies and making sure that we're able to play fast when we get there. And so that's something that he's really kind of mastered as he's gotten his coaching career throughout the years.
When you think back to that Week 6 game, just where are you health-wise maybe compared to, you had that lingering ankle thing in Week 6? Where are you health-wise maybe compared to that?
Yeah, obviously I, the ankle thing has felt better and better as the season's gone on, and I've been able to heal that up. But, going out there, I still think I'm going to be able to move and do all this similar type of things. I know I kind of banged it around that game, but going in, I'm definitely feeling good and ready to go out there and just play a football game.
I just asked Coach this a few minutes ago, but for you, similar to going up against the division team that you're so familiar with them, how much easier is the process in preparing for a team that you faced already with the schemes? So when you're sitting down for game plan meetings, that you have a better idea, you're not starting from scratch with a new look?
Yeah, I think it's better when you can understand each and every player and kind of what they do and what things they're really good at and what things they don't do as well. And you're able to kind of figure out exactly how you want to attack. Obviously this defense has a lot of really good football players on it, so we know it's going to be a challenge, and so we're just excited for the opportunity to go out there and play against one of the best teams in the football league at this time of the year.
During the bye week, you had enough time to kind of look back at yourselves. What did you kind of learn about yourselves going into the playoff run offensively that you feel that maybe you guys should improve upon more, things that you could correct?
I think it's just keep getting better at what we're doing. I think we've done a good job of keeping it balanced, running, throwing, whatever it is, the screen game and really everything, and just trying to do what we can to keep this offense rolling. And I think if we can just keep majoring on the details and focusing in on it, that we'll keep being able to put up points when we need to.
And you watch the games on Saturday, you're sitting watching these playoff games, you're waiting for your opponent, right?
Mm-hmm.
How many times did you think it was going to be this team and then that team and then the other team? What was your Saturday like watching these things?
Yeah, I didn't necessarily focus on who it was going to be. We got a little lucky because the Patriots and Houston kind of play similar schemes. And then I watched a little bit of Buffalo during the last week as well. And I kind of just try to keep myself with just a broad base of who we could play. And luckily I watched a good amount of Houston and we got them. And so I was able to really focus in on that as I came into the facility that next day and as this week has went on.
Both teams are different, right? But when you look back at what the Texans did last week, how much different did they actually look from your eyes?
Yeah, I think they do a good job of doing specific game plans for teams versus us. They did it one way. They do it different versus another team. And so I think the biggest thing is getting out there early in the game and figuring out what their game plan is and then finding ways to execute against it. And I think Coach Reed's done a good job of kind of building the game plan that we're able to do those things.
After the game last season against the Patriots, you talked about needing to let it hurt and that it should help you move you guys forward in the offseason. I'm curious what you remember about the immediate aftermath of the game and how you felt and what you started to do to move toward this season, how quickly you did that.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you lose and you're that close, you don't feel good. You're not going to be happy with the season. But as you look back on it, you understand the experiences that you got. And so I'm going to try to use those experiences to go out there and find a way to keep playing. I mean, we understand it's a day-by-day process. You have to execute every single day and be the best player you can be every single day, from practice to meetings to whatever it is, so that when you get to those games, you can execute at a high level and try to just keep playing.
When you came off the field, do you remember any sense of what you really felt or what you observed as you went into the locker room, and any particular hurt that came to mind?
Yeah, I mean, that's stuff that you've kind of have with every time you end a season, no matter what level it's at. But when you're that close, you want to make sure you give yourself an opportunity to get back. And so we've done that this year. We're in the playoffs. We understand we're still far away from our ultimate goal, but we understand it's a day-by-day process, and it's not something you can do on one weekend or one game.
Patrick, I remember before the season opener this year, just kind of the expression you have when I asked you about an entire OTA, mandatory minicamp, training camp to develop new plays that you guys had not put out together. Mm-hmm. Some guys in the locker room have mentioned the idea that, you know, maybe there are new plays that could be presented in the playoffs. Just how intriguing is that, and how much of an aspect can that be on Sunday to do something new that haven't been shown in the first 16 games?
Yeah, I mean, Coach Reed does a good job of having new plays every single week, it seems like. When we work on stuff, even if we don't use it, we're able to kind of carry it on to the next week and find ways to execute versus different defenses. And so I think that's a great thing to have at this point in the season. You're able to still do stuff that the teams can't scout for, and do stuff that you can hopefully have success with against those defenses.
You had to play an extended stretch this season without Eric Fisher. Just how valuable has it been to have a veteran guy like that protecting your back line side, especially against a guy like J.J. Williams?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, Fish has been playing at a high level for a long time now, and he's played against a lot of different defense ends that are really good. And like you said, J.J. Watt's a heck of a player and someone who's done it for a long time as well. So just being able to have someone that you know has been able to go out there with the best of them and compete and really hold his own is definitely something that gives you a lot of trust to stand in that pocket and make those throws.
Do you have to build a relationship with the left tackle, just as far as, you know, them understanding what you're going to do in the pocket and knowing where they're going to be and working around that?
Yeah, I mean, I try to build a relationship with all those guys. I mean, those are the guys that are protecting you, so I want to make sure that I know exactly what they're thinking, how they're going about their business. And I mean, obviously you want to make sure that you're protected back there and able to run the offense the way it's supposed to be ran.
When you went ones versus ones at the beginning of the season against your own defense, and now when you do it later in the year, how different is that group that you're kind of facing?
Yeah, I mean, you get to see all the different schemes and different stuff that they're kind of doing. Obviously, they don't game plan for us, but you get to see the different looks and how that quarterbacks have to really combat that. And I mean, I'm glad that I'm not playing against them. I'll say that.
What's your Tyrann Mathews' championship swagger? It seems like last game it sort of is bleeding into a lot of the offensive conversation as well. Just how much of the team do you think that they bought into this idea that we presented?
Yeah, I think it's a mentality. I mean, that's the biggest thing. At this point of the season, you're not going to be feeling the best. You're not going to be in your perfect tip-top shape, but you have to have that mentality that every single day you're gonna try to be great. And I feel like with this team, with Tyrann and with Frank, and then with the offensive guys, Travis and Tyreek, that we've kind of built this mentality that every single day we're going to go out there and be the best players that we can be.
You got to watch Frank go through his sort of setback and injuries and just the up and down stress that he had. Obviously, everybody knows about your injury. Just from your vantage point, going through what you went through, what was it like to sort of see him do his own sort of version of perseverance through this regular season?
Yeah, I mean, it's been awesome to see him kind of come on as late as he's gotten healthy and been able to do the things that he normally does. I mean, being last year playing against him, I understood that he's a good football player that's always around the quarterback, and you see him go throughout the season and he has his things or whatever it is, and kind of now getting healthy, you can see how much he can really impact the football game. And so I understand that with our defense, they're kind of all kind of coming into their own now and really impacting the game. And so we're going to try to do our part as an offense to find ways to win football games.
Patrick, I understand AFC championship game loss stuff, which you forbid. Curious, how long did the anger phase about that loss last for you?
I think it wasn't until after the Super Bowl. I think it kind of went away, and you watched the Super Bowl last year, and you're like, man, wish we were in that game. But after that, I kind of just went right back to working out, getting my body in the best shape possible, and trying to prepare to be in moments like we'll be in this weekend.
Patrick,
I know it's the other side of the table, but what do you see out of Deshaun Watson kind of from week six to now? Did you see, and then obviously the playoff game where he has an ability to kind of escape tacklers and never give up mentality?
Yeah, I mean, if you've watched Deshaun since college, and I'm sure even since high school, they're never out of a game. I mean, he's someone that can make big plays happen no matter what the scenario is, and he's going to fight until the end. And so you know that going into the game, so you know that coming in as an offense and as a defense and as a team, you have to make sure that you're on top of it all game long. It's going to be a 60-minute fight or even longer, whatever it takes. I mean, you have to make sure that you come in with that mentality that you're going to play your best football every single snap.
What are your expectations of what the atmosphere is going to be like? And then what's your message to fans and the mentality they need to bring when they come to Arrowhead on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, I don't even have to say it. I mean, they're going to be there and they're going to be loud. And so the atmosphere is going to be amazing. We'll be able to enjoy it. We're going to go out there and we're going to play our best football and try to find a way to get a win. And I'm sure that crowd will be a big help in that. A
couple more guys. Deshaun, this is going to be the second year since 2003 where the AFC Super Bowl quarterback isn't Brady or Roethlisberger and now you and Deshaun and Lamar Jackson all still alive in this phase of the playoffs, going to be somebody else. What do you see whenever you look at those guys and kind of the idea of this new class of young quarterbacks trying to fight for the AFC?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's exciting. You're getting to play guys that you've kind of seen around as you've kind of gone through either the recruiting cycle or being in college and then now in the NFL. And so you understand that they're good football players. They have really good football teams. And I mean, you just want to be in this part of the season and be able to play for something. And I'm excited that I have a team around me that we'll be able to go out there and play our best football and hopefully win.
Do you feel any of the weight of that generation of guys not being here in this moment this season?
Not necessarily. I mean, for me, it's all kind of that same mentality. No matter who it is, we have to go out there and do what we do as an offense, as a team, and in order to win. And we understand that the challenge is going to be high, but we're going to still play our best football.
Success throwing the football down the field, Pat. What is the successful part for you? Is it feel? Is it the chemistry, the timing? Andy said it was timing. What do you?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is just knowing when to take your shots and when to kind of go for the big play. It obviously helps that I have really fast guys running routes for me and that can go out and catch the ball. But, yeah, just being on the same page with those guys and giving them chances to make plays.
Okay, thanks, guys.
All right, Patrick Mahomes, as Chiefs get ready for the Houston Texans. Number of things I want to talk about and take away with that. Right now ESPN's talking about Patrick Mahomes and playing the Andy Reid quote about how much Andy Reid liked what he saw this year and working through the adversity for Patrick Mahomes. And now they're playing clips of Patrick Mahomes talking right now. It's Kush. I'm Kushed out. I got Kush. Kush, whatever.
Kushlash.
Kushlash. I got Kushlash right now.
I don't
now.
Have Patlash.
I do not have that as well. 913-912.
I can still watch him on every commercial during Chiefs games and be fine with it.
He was in the top right corner. It was PTI, and it was Mahomes and Watson in the top right corner. You know, they have the side bar, and then they've got the clock, and then above that they've got a small little square picture of what they're talking about. And it was that square picture was halved between Watson and Mahomes. And my son sitting across the room at the kitchen table goes, "Oh, Pat DeHomes." I'm like, yeah, that's right. He is the very, very small image in the top right. Well done, sir. He does not have Kushlash with Mahomes either. 913-912-4810, a number of things I want to talk about and take away. With that, something they talked about at the end there that I want to get into and discuss that I don't know that is being talked about really a whole lot in terms of the matchup on Sunday, and I think is kind of just say, oh, you know, that's there. We kind of understand that that's going to be the case, but is not, I don't think, being given as much of an impact on the game as I think it will be. We'll do that before on the other side of the break, and then we've got Mick Schaefer at 1 o'clock that's going to join us. More Zone rolling along on this Wednesday edition of the show. It's Sports Radio 810 WHB.